Blog Talk Radio.
Something happened to me last Thursday when I was driving home. I had a couple of miles to go. I looked up and saw a glowing orange object in the sky to the east. It was moving very irregularly. Suddenly, there was intense light all around me. When I came to,
Strange Around Secret Universe. I hope everybody's having a great evening. I'm pleased to bring back Matt Rush tonight. We're going to be talking in part four of the Reptilian Draconian Connection. Let's bring him on.
Hello,
Matthew. Hey, we don't have no trouble this time.
Good. You can hear me, right?
Oh, yeah, going loud and clear, bro.
Right.
So what'd you want? So what'd you think would be great to talk about. Also, if anybody would want to call in, it's 347-850-1258.
Well, you know, this is the fourth time I've been on, and I listened back over the other shows just to try and take notes and see, okay, what did I forget to mention? What can I clarify? And also, where have my thoughts developed further or my understandings developed on certain topics? And I think, you know, just a really quick, like, 30-second intro. I've been on your other shows. I've been on multiple radio shows. I've spoken at, you know, several MUFON meetings. I was on the New Orleans Police 2005 during Katrina, and I've had reptilian alien abductions since 2003. And in 2005, I was part of a mass abduction with other police and military where we were taken to a shopping mall after dark and used to train reptilians in crowd control techniques inside the mall. And you know, I found out through researcher Joe Montaldo, who runs ICAR, which is like sort of a rival to MUFON. They focus more on abductions. They only cover cases that have alien interaction. They don't cover, if you just have a craft sighting, they won't cover that unless there's some alien interaction. But he had all these other 15 other police and military who contacted him who were at the same mall, same abduction. And about on top of that, almost 15 other people who were civilians who were there. And we discussed that in detail in our past shows. I'm not going to rehash all that. So if you want to go back into the archives here or go to SoundCloud, Panama Orange. That's one word. I have a bunch of other interviews there, including one I did a few months ago on Darkness Radio. And but since we've already covered that area, I mean, let me start with the first thing, and that is let's go back to the whole ancient history involvement with reptilians on Earth. It's pretty clear from the legends around the world that reptilians, more than any other species that were involved with people, were teaching, you know, in Asia, in South America, in Africa. They were educating early humans. That was sort of like a central thing to what they were doing. And that even, you know, it comes up to the whole, the Bible and the snake and telling people they're giving them knowledge and they realize they're naked. That's kind of a good metaphor for their interactions with early humans, where humans didn't have a concept of how dumb they were until these advanced reptilians came and then they saw, oh, look at, you know, obviously we're not civilized and we're not at that level. But where I wanted to go with this is, you know, a lot of people talk about the Ancient Aliens show on reptilians is actually really thorough, covering all these legends around the world. And I know that's kind of a sensationalistic show, and everything on TV, especially sometimes that show, it's kind of dumbed down. But that it did a really good job. But a lot of people ask is, okay, what was their motivation in coming? And why them and not the Greys and the Nordics, who are probably, you know, passing by as well? Well, I think what it is with the reptilians, and you see this, and they've got this real obsession of hierarchy and this sort of feudalistic, dynastic the way they're structured, that they got more of a, I guess more of a high, you would say, out of teaching more primitive humans and coming down and having them build cities and structures. The gratification they got out of that was more, whereas like a gray would just get frustrated or a Nordic would get frustrated. It was frustrating for the reptilians, but then at the end, they get to be the smartest person in the room, the one at the top of the pyramid. They get to be, you know, so that was kind of what, that kind of guided their motivation a bit, to put up with the frustration of teaching humans, because they do like that feeling of being on the top step. I mean, you even see that with earth reptiles. You know, like if you put 10 iguanas in a cage, they'll constantly fight for what position on the branch they're going to be, just constantly, even if they don't have to, not for survival. And that's true for a lot of animals, true with humans, true with all sorts of social animals. But I think that's sort of a missing link in, you know, what? Because there's all this talk of how they came here to enslave us and control us, which doesn't really make sense, because primitive humans at the time, it's very clear from their legends, like the Sumerian legends, and in South America and Africa and Asia, that we didn't, our civilization was incredibly primitive. It was just huts and spears, and then the reptilians brought the use of forging metal and basic just building and using stone structures. So that you can't really say they took over society or controlled it, because they kind of invented civilization. Now, the other side of that argument is they did kind of give us their brand of civilization. You know, they kind of, in an imperial sense, it's kind of like the neocons nowadays who want to invade all these Middle Eastern countries and put our culture down their throat, so to speak. But that was one point I wanted to cover. And also branching off of that, you know, people talk about the Illuminati and the Masons and all these systems.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot on here.
Yeah, well, one point I didn't really get to, and I'm getting a greater understanding of, that is these organizations were not just created for Earth as a control system. This just branches out of the natural hierarchy and the sort of feudalistic structure of reptilian society, where they're still at a feudalistic state, even though they're spacefaring and advanced, and they're very focused on different bloodlines and different clans and different families, and you see that when they interact with abductees. That's how their society is structured generally, and all the Illuminati and the Freemasons, their obsession of bloodline, it just branches out of that. Because that's how they organize their own society, who you're related to, who you're descended from. I mean, when you have abductees and reptilians tell them specifically, you're descended from Montezuma, or you're descended from this great Viking leader, Ormsby, or this one guy I got in contact with by email, who's referred to me by another researcher, you know, middle-aged guy, grown kids, and these reptilians, he starts having these experiences, and they're telling him about the ancient Scythian people. A lot of, you know, when you look up the Scythians or the Scythians, you know, S-C-Y-T-H-I-N, not much, they're really weird, mysterious people, but they're very successful warriors. And, you know, they're telling him, oh, you're descended from this, you have this genetic line, and these Scythian people, they were a hybrid bloodline of ours as well. And again, that's another thing to address. When people talk about reptilian hybrids and hybrid bloodlines, it's not a matter of, you know, 50-50, half reptilian, half human. I'm sure that exists, and people have seen hybrid reptilians aboard ships and in bases. But in reptilian society, if you're 10% reptilian, 5%, 30%, they don't really obsess over the exact percent. You just have to have the percent, period. You know, it's kind of like the mafia in that sense. You know, if you've seen Goodfellas or something, where no matter how well you know them and you're in the organization, you can't get made unless you have that certain blood.
That's right.
That's sort of the same thing where, so when they came here, the Illuminati, the Freemasons, this is the same way they run their own society. This is not a separate control system they built as a leash around our neck. They do everything connected to bloodline and clans and families versus other families. And
you know, reptilians do definitely have, definitely when people describe them as a warrior culture, that's kind of a misnomer because they're really more of a feudalistic culture. And that's why so many reptilian abductees have seen reptilians kind of, you know, they've got the armor and the swords and this, you know, they kind of have that medieval thing going on still. And it's not unusual to see reptilians sort of fight with each other in appropriate moments. There was that story all over the internet like 2 years ago that General Emu Strenu out of Romania, you know, his friend saw those two reptilians driving a brand new NATO-type Hummer, no license plates, ran into him at a gas station, these two things. They were sitting in the Hummer. He saw them with the doors open. They freaked out, jumped back in, drove away at high speed. He caught up with them when he came around the corner. And the only reason they caught up with them is because they had pulled over to the side of the road. The doors were flung open on both sides of the Hummer, and they were arguing with each other right there in the street, like blocking traffic. And they had, you know, tinted windows. They had, you know, plausible deniability. And they with the doors flung open, that implies not only they were fighting before they even exited the car. So instead of just maneuvering away from him, they end up getting a fight with each other. And that's, you know, this other reptilian abductee, I was reading her blog, and she was aboard like a gray, this was like a gray alien-run ship, but this one reptilian was kind of doing security. And she gets to the front of the line, and out of nowhere, this reptilian just says, you know, I'll bite your head off. And she freaks out on him, like, why would you, you know, I was behaving, why would you say that to me? And the reptilian's like, well, you know, I found if I say that phrase to people, it instantly gets their attention and they don't give me any trouble. So she's just going around every human he ever saw in an abduction just saying, hey, I'll bite your head off. And which kind of ties back into that experience at the mall. One of the other guys who was there, a National Guardsman, said something sarcastic to a reptilian and it nipped him really hard on like the shoulder, on the clavicle. And then in 2003, my initiation abduction, as you call it, I was bit really hard in the exact same spot. And that might explain the whole biting thing. They know it has a really deep effect in stunning us or scaring us compared to other types of violence. So that might be sort of a planned thing. But it all comes down to, they're a very effective military, the reptilians, or the military cat, extremely effective. They're selectively bred for that for many generations, and they're trained from a very early age. But they're not what you'd call a professional military. They're not, they have a lot of, you know, they do things very loosely when it comes to discipline and the types of things they do randomly. And that would also explain why on multiple occasions on two different radio shows, but also in many private conversations, I've had reptilians while talking on Skype barge into the conversation and growl and roar, like, yeah, because they're listening in. Now, obviously, our military, you know, if you did that kind of thing, you would be, well, not only would you be fired, but if you were working for some, you know, other organization, they'd fire you and then probably take you somewhere and waterboard you. Whereas in the reptilian society, their military is, it's a bit looser. I think the reason that the standards are looser and the behavior is looser is because you're born into it. You can't get court-martialed. You can't get drummed out. You can't get worried about getting released or fired or put out in like a psych. Yeah, you're it's a lifetime automatic membership set. So, again, there's that sort of mafia element where they can play things a bit fast and loose the way they behave. And that does give them kind of a reputation. I mean, and this is the one area where, like, ancient aliens kind of fall short. And actually, a lot of people, when they talk about the ancient reptilians, they're missing a big gap of time when we referred to them as dragons in the Middle Ages, not just in Europe, but in Asia and many other places. And that was a whole other period that they were involved with that we kind of forgot. And I know absolutely from my experiences in that mall when the reptilians were using those backpack-powered weapons that it does give the impression that they're breathing fire. They've got these real thin, they fire these things, and they hit you with the indirect fire. And by indirect fire, I mean they'll shoot an object near you
and that pellets give sparks and light and heat, and it turns anything they hit into like kind of a stun grenade. And they've been doing that clearly throughout the Middle Ages, and that's where we got the legend of the fire-breathing dragon, because you're generally going to survive that counter because they're going to shoot around you and not hit you directly. If they have to shoot you directly, they'll shoot you directly, but it's easier just to shoot something near you and pellet the sparks and fire and get your running, which is a weapon and technique they still use. But that's interesting that for every one reptilian in that mall that had one of those devices, you had other reptilians armed just with their claws, just with their fangs. I mean, nothing else. They had no other weapons, which is not uncommon for reptilians to be seen doing some kind of military or security duty, literally just armed with their claws and fangs. That's it. Sometimes they carry, a knife on their belt or carry a spear or some jewelry, but they can fight just completely unarmed and do it very effectively, which kind of goes back to, again, this whole science fiction trope, how reptilian-type beings are portrayed. And I mean, there's, several movies out in the past just few months. Or there's I saw Alien Outpost. They had reptilian-type aliens in it, and they're using these laser weapons and artillery. And here's the thing about reptilians. They don't need to use artillery, cannons, rockets at all. I mean, you generally don't even see reptilians carrying like scoped weapons. You don't see them with any long range cannons. They don't need their fighting technique. It's entirely around close range combat because they're very naturally effective at that and very fast. So they don't need to go around blowing things up. I mean, when you look at the history of humans and cannons, artillery and archery, and I mean, that's basically soften the enemy up before you charge them. They don't need to soften you up. They'll just run in as it is, which is why they're so effective in, like, the crowd control type thing they were training for. They don't need they can take things on, at a very hand-to-hand direct level without having to have layers of armor and things to slow people down in between. Now, yeah, those backpack weapons are helpful, but that's pretty minimalistic. I mean, that's the equivalent in the military of a shotgun or something. It's a close range weapon. They don't need to cause massive damage to bring.
Or do you think it's somehow to just induce fear into us? Like when you say you were talking about the crowd control and situations like that.
Well, I think there is definitely a human military involvement with the choice of the mall and the choice of the abductees, many of whom were police and military at the time. And it's funny, when these, and there's a few of them on that Reach group, which you're in, the Reptilian Contact Facebook group, which you can, it's kind of a secret group, but if you go to Positive Reptilian Contact and a few other places, you can get an invite to it. But the point is, not just there, other abductees have seen that when reptilians and human military work together in abductions, there's this real demarcation line where they're constantly disagreeing on who's in charge. And to an extent, it's kind of, again, the whole reptilian culture, sort of standoff, feudalistic. It's hard for them to just fall into line of saying, okay, I'm working for the military. They'll say they're working with the military, but they always make it very clear they don't work for them. They're just working on a project at the same time in the same area. And they're very so there is this interesting tug of war where it's not really clear who's in charge, or neither of them can agree who's in charge to a certain extent. So it's hard to tell, like in the training we had in that mall abduction, was the military's idea, was the reptilians' idea? I think there's an equal chance both were involved. I mean, the military would know that economically this country is very fragile. I mean, there's a statistic that came out just a few days ago. Only 44% of Americans are working more than 30 hours a week. Like 75% of Americans, and this is from Bankrate.com, they have no savings. They're working paycheck to paycheck. And, mortgage applications are through the floor. The employment-to-population ratio is under 63%. It's in some kind of unrest situation. malls, you know, upscale malls. And, yeah, a lot of malls closed down. I realize that. But guess what? Upscale malls are doing better than ever. And
of course.
Any mall that's open is a major target for not just necessarily looters, but also for politically motivated rioters, like we saw Ferguson on Black Friday. You have three separate shopping malls shut down by organized flash mob protests on Black Friday around St. Louis. And then Mall of America was shut down like a week later for a whole day by protesters. And the police saw it coming. They couldn't do anything about it. So the reptilians obviously a lot more effective in that crowd control capacity. And now the reptilian motivation for getting involved in that, again, many abductees, again, you see reptilians with jewelry, male and female reptilians. I mean, like big, like the medallions the size of, small hubcaps and occasionally gold. And even when they're not carrying jewelry, when they're carrying just weaponry, a spear, a knife, they like things to be handcrafted, custom. They like them to look really nice. And, they have an appreciation for the kind of things you would find in a mall. And this goes back to, you know, the Legends of Dragons, which are very specific about how they'd like to take jewelry and rob people of gold and treasure and take it back to their caves. Of course, the caves being entrances to underground bases. But people at the time didn't have an understanding of that. They thought that these monsters would come out of caves, steal your stuff, then take it in the cave and sit on it in a pile. Well, obviously they weren't. That's not what they were really doing, but that's what they imagined. Yeah. Like when a cat or a bird steals jewelry from your house, and that's what they do. You know, people find cats.
Or like a
pack
rat. You know,
yeah.
they use the example of pack rat. You know,
yeah, a lot of animals will steal shiny objects, pretty things, and pile them up, stick them in nests. So they'd obviously assume, hey, this gang of reptilians took my stuff. They must be in that cave sitting on it in a nest. Well, no, they were taking it back to their underground cities and probably melting it, making it out of jewelry. Because reptilians really, again, that custom, when they do wear jewelry or weapons, they like stuff to be completely customized, handcrafted, individualistic.
Do you think that's the connection between reptilians and us human beings of our love for jewelry and all this other stuff? I think there's a connection there.
Our artistic abilities that does seem to draw them a bit, because we do have creative. Because you'll see, when people want to see the really big draconians, like the big albino 8-9 feet ones, they decorate their living spaces with human art, various types of human art. It's not off-world alien art. So they do appreciate things made on Earth. And, humans do have kind of artistic ability in that sense. I mean, it's kind of like at the time jazz was popular. Even though America was really consuming jazz like crazy, you still had a lot of racism, and they wanted the music, but they didn't. They still looked down on the people. So it's the same thing for like reptilians and us. They really like our art, but some of them don't necessarily think we're equal at all. They just think we're artistically gifted in that sense. And I think to a certain extent, our manual dexterity, which a lot of things, we were gatherers more than hunters, really. I mean, when people say hunter-gatherers, humans spend a lot of time gathering and climbing, and, we have really good ability. I mean, as far back as you go in the human record of fossils, we were doing something artistic. I mean, you go back way back in caveman era, making necklaces and chains, and, so by the time they got here and interacted with us, they didn't have to teach us that much when it comes to making jewelry. And we were doing it out of bones and sticks and hundreds of thousands of years ago. So they just had to say, no, here, you take this metal. We'll melt this metal for you. Make jewelry out of that for me. And that's why when you look at the ancient reptilian Sumerian statues, some of them, where people think, well, those were gods, those were high-ranking reptilians, those are kings and queen reptilians. No, those are probably just regular middle class or just reptilians who had lots of cheap jewelry because they had all these natives they were sticking in workhouses that could make jewelry for them really cheap. when they arrived. So that's why that one female reptilian you see with the smaller reptilian baby she's carrying, and she has that jewelry, and it's like, well, you know, they had all the jewelry they wanted, you know, with the cheap labor, with the first primitive humans they're interacting with. So, yeah, it's, I mean, this is something that goes back to, like, something Joe Montano has said, and something I agree with, and other researchers have made this point, that mentally, in terms of psychology, reptilians are very similar to us in many ways. In fact, you could argue they're more similar to us than the Greys or even the Nordics. I mean, they're kind of, they kind of evolved from sort of a pack hunting type. I mean, our ancestors, the way they hunted and behaved in tribes and hunted, it's not that different from theirs. So we're very close in a lot of ways.
And I think that maybe that was a lot of times that they were, you know, they were introduced to us as gods and stuff like that. You know, maybe they were always cloaked or some way, you know, whenever, you know, back in Greek times, you know, we talk about the oracles and all these different beings of power. You know, what you think there could be a connection there too?
Well, if you look at like the Nomos and the Syria, the reptilians from Sirius, they interacted with the Dogon people. They were very clear that they were aliens, and they came in ships, and they came from another star system. They never claimed to even be gods, but the people there said, well, we're going to call you gods and worship you anyways. So
yeah,
it's possible that in many of these interactions, they weren't saying they were gods at all. They were saying, hey, we came on a ship, came from this planet, and people were like, it was too confusing, so it's like, well, we'll just call you gods, because you might, you know, that's compared to us, you're gods, we'll just call you that, you know.
Yeah.
It's done. It's kind of, I mean, look at the cargo cults and things that were worshipping cargo planes, where you have these primitive tribes, God, this is like back in the, around World War II, and they thought if they did certain rituals, the cargo planes would drop things for them, and, you know, it's, so it's not necessarily the reptilians tried to pretend to be gods. They could have been.
No. Like that figment was put into our heads to see them as the obviously a higher beings, or something that we came from, or what we was, or you know.
Well, the one thing about reptilians is their sense of hierarchy is very strong. Like, when you see some of these albino draconians, like Simon Parks has seen, and Ken Bakeman, and they'll have, for example, you know, 10 sons. This you have a high-ranking draconian, 8-9 foot, from the albino breed. But within the 10 sons, you have this real clear hierarchy. You've got, like, the two chosen sons that follow the dad around all the time, like apprentices, just watching and observing, and when he drops dead, one of them will take over. And you've got the sons beneath that that are less, and then you are beneath the sons that are beneath him, and they make it very clear who's above who and who's above what. So they would have been, when they came, very clear, like, hey, we're not gods, but we're definitely above you. You know, we're smarter, we know what we're doing. And that would be translated into, you know, the notion of gods. And I'm not saying they're responsible.
It could be mixed with, do you think that a lot of that could be somehow mixed with religions today of some sort?
Well, I think that, you know, God exists separately from, I'm not one of those people who thinks all our notions of God and demons and things comes from aliens. I think that's a totally separate thing. I think it's easy to mistake other beings for that because of their behavior. But I do believe that's a real and separate spiritual thing that's not connected, and you can't just explain that with alien activity.
You know, let's try
to talk
about
the mythology. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Matt. Go ahead. No, excuse me.
Well, I think that's why, you know, some of the early, like the pagan mythologies, where they have all these different specific gods, and you got to sacrifice this item on this altar at this time of day. I think some of that was from aliens, and very clear. Whereas when you get the more notion of you know, the monotheistic God. I think that's closer to reality. But we had a long period in our history where it was all these tiny little gods always who had very non-godlike behaviors, like the gods, the ancient Greek gods. I mean, the way the ancient gods behaved, the Greek gods, those seem to be some kind of Nordic aliens or human-like aliens living in those mountains who were just kind of, you know, douchebags. And so you got to separate it. But it's easy for primitive people to not know what's a god and what isn't. You know, I've used the analogy before. It's like if you own a dog, you know, they think that the mailman is a demonic serial killer and your vacuum is trying to kill them. And so...
But I just want to tell you, now we were talking about what's now we were talking about the rituals. You were saying, you know, at a certain ritual, you know, at a certain time, certain day, whatever. Now, I think we might have touched the surface of this on a previous chapter, but is there sound waves or is there any shamanistic chants or something that can provoke these beings that you've seen from your research or anything or experience?
Well, a lot of them are telepathically connected to certain abductees, so it's not a matter of the ritual or how it's performed, but more of like intent or this long distance connection to a certain extent, which is enhanced by implants. Like, I mean, I've got this implant that's in my pelvis I've talked about before that runs all the way through back to the spine. And but different people have implants in different places. One of the other abductees who's at the mall, a policeman, still on the New Orleans police, he's got an implant in the back of his knee, and it knocks out scanner. If he goes to the Winn-Dixie, it just completely fries the scanner. So we had to stop shopping at Winn-Dixie. But the point is, if it's that powerful, I mean, that's easily on par with like the cell phone I'm talking on now. So it's more, I don't think the rituals and drawing symbols, but the mental intent that will connect if you're an abductee or if you're connected to the reptilians. And that goes for greys and other beings too. So a lot of these old witch doctor, you know, shaman type things, there's a misunderstanding of how to focus that intent and do the telepathic contact from a distance. And a lot of those rituals will get you into the right mind state to do that, but they're not necessary. It's you know, kind of a placebo effect that gets you in the right.
Yeah. There's no chalice full of blood or cannibalism, no crazy orgies, anything like that.
Reptilians do, like the big albino draconians, they do all sorts of crazy, weird, real specific rituals that it's almost like voodoo or Santeria, where it mixes, like in Ken Bakeman's case, he was taken to this one group of albino draconians, this albino draconian and his sons, and they forced him to do a regular Christian baptism on him, you know, kind of at sword point. But then the rest of it was they made him dress up in a Templar costume, and he had to walk through this little chapel, and, you know, the draconian was at the front with his two sons, and his sons had to prick each other with these daggers down their belts, these Viking-type daggers, and he had to drink the blood. And they had Masonic flags, and they had the Viking heraldry flags, but then the regular Christian baptism, but then the Templar ritual. They mix a lot of stuff together at the high level, where we think these are separate organizations, and we think the Templars are fighting the Christians, or the Christians are fighting the Freemasons, or the Skull and Bone. Well, when you get to the top draconian level, they'll do a ritual, and they'll include everything. They'll throw it all in to, like, cover all the bases, kind of like, you know, religions that have done that, where they'll mash up different other traditions together to try and appease everything. And
what if all of that, really, you know, the Masons, Illuminati, all that is really just taking elements, you know, old elements and old ways of the Reptilians and Draconians. And today we see it pretty much hidden in plain sight. You know, I'm able to spot stuff out. I know you are because of the stuff, you know, all the research you've done and the experiences and stuff like that, and me as a researcher. But, you know, a lot of people don't even pay attention to things that, you know, that really go on. And you were talking about the you know, the spine, you know, you know, like the spine and something. There was something I was reading about, and it had some kind of serpent thing, connection with Kundalini. You know anything about that, Matt?
Yeah, that was the sort of spinal energy type magic that the ancient, the gods in India, the reptile underground gods called Nagas, taught them about the Kundalini. And yeah, I've got an implant that works on that sort of principle of taking energy that would normally leak out of my sort of pelvic area and it feeds it back into the spine. And it's funny, you know, DARPA the other day, they're talking about an implant they're coming out with that's powered by spinal energy. And also they have another implant they talked about, you know, 5 months ago that you put it in your body and it redirects energy to different parts of your nervous system. Like it'll cut off from one spot and redirect it where it's needed. And, you know, my implant, I talked about that many, you know, way before DARPA even talked about doing this stuff, which sounded like science fiction before they mentioned it. So they seem to have an understanding of directing energies around and to different places and how to use that in a healing way, kind of like acupuncture. But yeah, the Kundalini, that was, if you look at the history of it mythologically, it came from reptilians. And that was, yeah, still kind of a big thing in India. It's central to yoga and a lot of the things they use. But it had a real science behind it brought from the
reptilians. They keep on talking, Matt, about, you know, the Grail and how the Grail always travels west. Now, do you think there's a connection with you know, the reptilians always traveling west too? Do you think there's a connection there as well?
I mean, when I look at, like, Ken Bakeman, I keep bringing him up because he's had experiences and drawings of the reptilians and their backpacks that are dead-on accurate. And that's why, you know, I'm not the kind of guy to just embrace someone's story just on face value because they said it happened. But the point is, he had that Templar thing where they're giving the blood in the chalice and they had the, you know, the crucifixes everywhere. But their version of the crucifix was a dagger with a snake wrapped around it, you know, like on a shield, like a white cobra, which reptilians use a lot. The winged cobra, the white cobra, that represents the winged, the highest level of the reptilians. And it even goes back to like Egyptian hieroglyphics. Based on what they showed him, the those weird arm poses you see in the pyramid, those are still used by winged reptilians. It's like they have their own language, language of ritual poses they do with their wings to communicate different things to each other. And also it kind of sends energy. The whole Egyptian, where you've got two people and their hands are straight out and not touching but like parallel with each other, that's actually, you know, they can join energies and send energies to each other, reptilians. And
I think I seen a picture with that. It was a Kim Bakeman or something. It was the white draconians, and there was an adult accompanied by two small ones, and they were both, their arms were even in a, like, a right angle.
They had their hands out, but not touching, but almost touching, and they were parallel with each other, like they were sending energy between each other. Yeah, that's, you know, it's funny. In that experience you have with this, that there was a large female draconian, you know, it requested that when he draw her, that he draw like a tiara on her head. And I know another female reptilian abductee who's got a blog who had an experience with a female reptilian. And just like in Ken Bakeman's case, it was so demanding on how she draw it, the pose, the color, and this position. And, you know, that's, which is something you don't see with like male reptilians. Yeah, they'll be in the jewelry and how they look, but the female reptilians, if you say they're going to draw them, they will tell you exactly how you they want, real specific about making them look nice and how you pose them and the color and the background. And so they're very, people don't run into female reptilians as often as males, it seems. And the females definitely have different personalities. Like they tend to be kind of condescending, especially. Like some reptilian males can be directly kind of threatening and aggressive sometimes. Not all of them, but just occasionally, especially the warrior cast types. Whereas the females sound to you like you're mentally challenged in a really nice way, but it's more of a condescending aggression, not like a direct aggression. But then they're really,
Will the females try to seduce the males? Is there a compilation between reptilian females and human males?
Well, three different cases I've read of that where the female reptilians have approached a human male and they start singing from like a distance. Like they'll be 20 feet away and they're singing to you telepathically, sometimes a human song. And so that seems to be when they're hitting on someone or a human male, there seems to be, they're pretty pushy, but they sing to the male, which is interesting because with most like male animals on this planet, they sing to the female. So that's a bit different. It's not always that way. That's usually the male trying to do a song. And that goes for insects and birds and all sorts of animals, but the female reptilians, the other way around, they'll sing to you if they're, trying to come on to you. And they're definitely a bit different than the males in their personality, how they do things. Generally, you don't see females carrying weapons. You don't see, I'm not saying they can't. I'm just saying you don't, I've yet to hear of that or armor or anything. I know with the, this one breed of winged reptilians can run into. The females didn't have wings. They're about the same size as the big males, but wingless. I don't know if they take the wings off or cut them off or I don't know. But
that's very interesting. We covered a lot of ground as usual, Matt. I appreciate as usual. I really appreciate you coming on talking about reptilians, draconians, and. We'll have to put all this in a book. I'm telling you, there's a lot of useful information. And now especially a lot of people are coming out of the woodwork experiencing these reptilian experiences. I think that a lot of it should be documented.
Yeah, I mean, there's that show Monsters and Mysteries in America who contacted me about being on it, and then I didn't hear back from them for a few weeks. Then they contacted me again. Then the guy disappeared. Then they just went and did it without me. But they had an experience on there with this. It was a show on reptilian experiences, two different people. And one of them, this woman, she was having reptilian abductions, but also one time her kid had a younger reptilian basically in her bedroom closet that she was interacting with. And I've heard of that before. And Joe Montano's talked about that. And James Bartley, another researcher, has talked. You'll have a family with reptilian abductions, and the reptilians will bring their kids to interact with your kids. And, so that's not as far-fetched.
Maybe it's a grooming thing, man, to get you used to it for your whole life, because like we've said many times, that it's a DNA thing, and maybe that is why they interact.
If you're abducted by reptilians, you have more reptilian blood in you than the average person. They don't just abduct you. That's a requirement, basically, to be abducted by them. That's not necessarily true of Greys and Nordics, but if you're abducted by reptilians, you have way more reptilian DNA than the average person. Which explains why in that Louis C.K. interview, famous one on YouTube, where Rumsfeld would not deny being a reptilian. You looked that up on YouTube.
Yeah, I remember that.
Louis C.K. is asking him, hey, that doesn't mean he's a shapeshifter or half reptilian. He might be 20%, 15%, but he knows, and he's been at some ritual or he's been in contact, and he's not allowed to say no because it would be a big insult.